Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live without a shirt. My very special guest is Lenny Time, who's coming at us live from somewhere that doesn't have 91% humidity. Lenny, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinnie, good to be aboard.
I'll try to refrain from nipple references. So, Lenny, will you give us a little bit of a background about yourself, who you are, and what it is you do?
Sure. I am a natural resources chemist that has taken to applying it to change the world. So I got my degree in chemistry from Oregon State University. I did some postdoc work at Brandeis. And then I went to work for NASA doing water purification. After that, I moved to a metal mining company and worked in their laboratory running their analytical lab for a while. Then got to work at a zoo teaching kids about math and science. At that point, sometime in the mid-2000s, I had some revelations, went off and became a hermit, learned metaphysics, and started thinking about changing the world rather than the world I was taught to, which is the world of Monsanitized chemistry. And so I'm just a person who's an agent of change.
Aren't we all? And your focus now, as Carol Rosen, who introduced us, has informed me, is chemtrails, and you'll be giving a few talks on that as well. Could you describe those talks you're about to give?
Yes. I'm going to talk about metals in the atmosphere. Excuse me. There's lots of things that are being sprayed that are part of geoengineering, which is an approach that it is set to fix global warming by changing the albedo of the Earth. At least that's what the geoengineers tell us. But in reality, I worked with Michael Murphy and Dane Wigington and was in the movie What in the World Are They Spraying? And the stuff that they're spraying isn't of benefit to anybody on the planet that is living and breathing. Now, there are some people that are recognized by the Supreme Court that are actually corporations, and they get to make laws. And so I sort of have walked away from that system, and I'm looking at it from a direct way of shutting it down so that we can stop what we're doing, lower the human footprint on Earth. What we're actually doing is we're starting to affect the metabolism. And if you believe that the planet is alive, which is a theory proposed by Lovelock and Margulis called the Gaia Theory back in the 1990s, as a living, breathing planet, it's got its own intelligence, its own consciousness, and what humans are doing on the surface of the Earth in the last 150, 200 years doesn't help things at all.
Well, it's one of those many, many things, and it's I had a conversation with a friend a while ago about these types of big, bad situations. There's so many of them, and yet the problem with chemtrails is that it's so bad that it actually eclipses a large portion of the rest of the world's problems to be virtually irrelevant.
Well, part of the problem, as I see it, is the fact that we do not get good information from any sources anymore. It used to be that we could believe in doctors, lawyers, scientists, Indian chiefs, and people who are in strategic positions of power. But in the society today, those people have found that they do better by lying to us and setting their own agendas than by being straightforward. And it really looks to me like we've got to pull the plug on a lot of the ways we do things, especially here in this country, the United States. You're not here, though. You're in New Zealand, right?
Yeah, but however, we're going to be signed up to the TPPA on February 4th, as I understand it. So we'll be part of the United States soon enough.
You're darn right. But you know what? I would venture to argue, as sovereigns of a living earth, that we are not subject to commercial law. But that's a whole nother story, and that's not at all where my brain has been at recently. You know, this is the sixth major mass extinction happening in the planet's history, and the planet's been through it before. The planet will survive, but whether humans are beyond the mass extinction really depends on a lot of things that we haven't been paying good enough attention to at this point. Now, when we talk about chemtrails, we're talking about climate engineering for solar radiation management. So what they're thinking that they're doing by spraying this stuff out is putting the metal ions into the atmosphere and having it so that they reflect different things up in the atmosphere and turn away the direct sunlight and the radiation and send it back before it reaches down onto the Earth. But you know what? They're talking about 20 million metric tons of aluminum alone each year, not to mention the barium, strontium, other ions, bioparticles, and different things they have.
Oh, so that's now, down from the 30-odd million tons that they said that they were going to do, you know. Might be a good idea. Well, I suppose they've toned down their approach somewhat, huh?
Well, you see, the 20 million metric tons that I'm talking about are only aluminum, so that leaves 10 tons of everything else. Still not a good deal for us.
Oh, well, that's very comforting.
Aluminum also is associated with autism, Alzheimer's, and mad cow disease and BSE in animals.
Is this perhaps a possible explanation why so many people deny that chemtrails exist, even when they're looking at them? Because maybe they've gotten like a temporary glitch of Alzheimer's right there. I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it right now, but I forgot. It's right there in front of me, but I forgot.
Well, actually, I have a theory on that too. And it goes like this. We are suffering from that syndrome that victims of kidnapping sometimes have, where you fall in love with the people who have been lying to you and holding you hostage
Stockholm Syndrome.
So long. Yeah, and we've got a major case of it because the stuff that we can see, and I've seen clouds in lines across the sky like we all have, but I've seen one do a U-turn and go back in the other direction, which I know clouds don't naturally do. But I don't think there's a question that they're spraying stuff any longer. When we first started complaining bitterly about this in 2009 and 2010, they were denying that they were even spraying. At this point, we're ready to send the drones off behind the airplanes to collect the samples. But the fact is that if they were not spraying aluminum, then why is Monsanto developing aluminum-resistant crops?
Maybe because they're afraid of recycling.
Yes, I think that must be it. You know who else is affected by this aluminum really badly? Are the bees. The whole colony collapse disorder stuff is very likely due to the effects of aluminum. The way aluminum works that's so insidious is it's not like the barium or strontium or the other alkali ions that are there. Aluminum's a heavy metal, even though it's actually fairly light. But what happens is that when aluminum ionizes, it ionizes with a 3+ charge. That means that 3 electrons from the aluminum have taken off and said bye. And in chemistry, charge always has to be balanced. So when those 3 electrons take off, they go somewhere. And when aluminum gets into a biological system, it generally replaces an alkali earth ion, which is a 2+ charge, And so because it has a 3+ charge, but it's replaced something with a 2+ charge, another 1+ charge gets kicked off from somewhere else nearby. And that creates a hole. What is Alzheimer's disease? It's Swiss cheese of the mind, a lot of big holes. Well, now we have a mechanism that explains how those holes work. So the trick is to not be spraying this stuff at all. And while we're at it, reduce the amounts of farm chemicals, pesticides, and herbicides, and get rid of the GMOs also. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox for the moment.
To be honest, this show is meant to be your soapbox for the next 2 hours. If you feel like saying more, go right ahead.
In that case, let's talk about the oceans. Because, you know, in 2010, they did a blood study over 1,000 whales from all over the planet in each of the 5 different oceans, and it showed stunningly high levels of heavy metals. The oceans are part of this geoengineering game also with something called ocean fertilization, where they spray metals in the ocean to act as catalysts to start algae and plankton growth in order to absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And so this is what they say, but the ocean life, all these things that swim around and underneath the seas, are also dealing with radiation from Fukushima in the Pacific and a lot of uranium-containing DU ordnance. There's another thing. The ocean temperatures are rising, and depending on what you believe about the spraying programs, there's a lot of problems in the ozone layer and with UV radiation making it to Earth. So we're affecting the climate patterns, we're affecting the wind patterns, we're affecting the currents. In fact, the biggest thing that has affected the currents is that oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. You remember the one that they decided to disappear by dumping a whole bunch of Corexit on it and sinking the oil and then saying it went away?
Yeah, I that was actually the one incident that I saw in alternative media that made me quit my job and become part of the alternative media, right? And then the Fukushima thing happened and I quit my part-time job also and then devoted myself full-time to alternative media. So trust me, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, that BP oil spill achieved in less than 5 years what no other folly of mankind has done since the beginning of human habitation on Earth. It has messed up the thermohaline circulation system. And the North Atlantic Current, which used to dip in there and come around and then go down the coast before it came across the Atlantic, doesn't exist anymore.
That's true. We published an article about that on guerrillamedia.co.nz when it was first reported, and it was only reported in very, very like sparse alternative media that, oh, the North Atlantic Current shut down. And I was like, holy cat, because I'd only just watched The Day After Tomorrow, you know that movie where it's prophesized that everything just gets totally fucked up as soon as that North Atlantic Current shuts down. And I was just freaking out, man. But apparently it doesn't do that dramatic an effect. However, there are lots of other effects which are incredibly dramatic and also incredibly underreported. Could you go into those, please?
Yeah, you have different effects like the dead zones that are produced from lack of circulation. And what's happening is that by using rivers as sewers and putting out all sorts of industrial pollution and human waste into the rivers, we've managed to deplete the oxygen not only in the rivers but in extended areas. So we get red tides, we get deaths of sea stars, tuna crabs, jellyfish, and excess algae blooms and marine die-offs. The whole thing is called the Canfield Ocean. It's a seascape marked by areas of stagnation. And then we have the poles. As the poles melt, sea levels rise. Well, that's only partially true. Sea level rises for all the ice that melts off the land, but any ice that melts that's in the form of an iceberg already floating in the ocean has already displaced its weight, and it's not going to affect sea level.
It's funny you should say that. I was just thinking that this very morning about ice is actually bigger when you freeze the water than when you melt it. So it didn't make any sense to me that they were talking about global warming, the polar ice caps melting, and the sea level rising. It's like it didn't make any sense because the sea level would technically go down if the ice caps melted. So the whole thing melting off the land and that raising the sea level, on the other hand, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Another factor there is the release of methane, because there are pockets where the methane in the water has come together to make methane hydrate, and that has been frozen into the ice. And as long as it remains cold, it's solid, there's no problem there. But as the polar regions heat and the ice coverage slips back, some of this methane is being released out into the atmosphere. Now, methane is 100 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide in your time frame, but it will be reacted completely in that 10-year time frame, whereas carbon dioxide doesn't really get reacted in short periods of time. It takes an awful lot of trees to convert that carbon dioxide to oxygen, and we've been in the habit of cutting trees rather than planting them.
Apparently, the Native Americans had a plan where if you ever cut down one tree, you have to plant three more.
And that works, except when you plant three more and they all take, and now you've got a forest that is quite crowded because you've got an even age tree growth because you overplanted it. Plus, they also tend to plant monocultures, which doesn't do much for forest diversity.
Permaculture, on the other hand, doesn't have that big of a problem, does it?
Not in the least. And in fact, I consider myself a social permaculturist because I've been involved in trying to get communities growing back on ground level scales. I really believe that the solution to globalization is localization, and that it's nice to have a global world where you and I can talk between the USA and New Zealand. But the fact is that you living in New Zealand ought to be eating crops that you grow, having your own production of everything that you need to excess so that we can develop trade routes and exchange the stuff we can't get by growing it in our environment. But that's not quite how it works. When I worked at the nickel mine, we used to get our ore from New Caledonia. I know you know where that is.
Yeah, it's right next to Old Caledonia.
Yes, it is. And it's quite a bit of expense to ship the ore across the Pacific Ocean by boat and then haul it by truck to the site where our smelter would turn it into metal. But that was actually cheaper than mining it here ourselves due to the environmental regulations.
Oh my God. Just so insanity, you know, insanity, right? It sort of, in fact, I just think I had a realization here. The business world and insanity are not mutually exclusive. In fact, if you want to do good business, it's actually to your advantage if you're clinically insane.
Yes, as long as you don't connect the dots, you're not responsible for them, and you have plausible deniability.
But it's so much better to just know exactly what's going on, but have that plausible deniability built in anyway, so that you can't be held accountable for any of the things that you do wrong.
Yeah, and when we look at this and we take a step back, as long as the geoengineering is allowed to take industrial pollutants and scatter them around the earth as a means of the solution to pollution is dilution, then we're going to be continually creating environmental challenges for nature, the planet, and ourselves. If we each clean up our own act in our home region, we might be able to turn the tide on a much larger basis, but to get there, we have to stop the behaviors that cause the problem.
Well, it seems that being an individual, as you are, taking individual responsibility for analyzing a problem and actually trying to come up with a solution seems to be the way ahead. However, the current way ahead that we're being told by our politicians, etc., is more collectivism, more big business, more corporate fascism, and more corporate welfare, right? This is apparently what's going to save us all from the terrible collectivism and corporate fascism that led us to this point. More fascism!
Yeah, and in reality, if we all step up to the plate and take control over our own lives and do not seed that there is an Uber structure to tell us what to do, it's going to take a lot of work to come up with better ways of doing things, but we have enough creative people that we should be able to do all that work. We're terribly unemployed by the amount of jobs that are there because they've replaced everybody they could with automation.
I hate the idea of having a job, you know?
Job means just over broke. And no matter how much you get paid, that's what you have.
It could mean any number of things, because I'm starting to get the kind of century sort of view here, that the 20th century was the century in which we evolved from having some kind of independence, some kind of intelligence, to being slaves in perpetual bondage, which is cemented by increasing ignorance.
I have to agree with you. That's a very good assessment of the 20th century, but it's one that, seeing now, we should definitely go, hey, wait a minute, I'm not signed up for that one anymore.
It's kind of like a car crash, you know, when you know you're about to crash and you slam on the brakes, but you think you're going to hit the wall anyway. We're in that moment right now, I think.
And you know what? The best thing to do is to hit the wall, because what we'll find is that the wall is an illusion and we were never going to get through it until we took that step to trust that it isn't there and just barrel right on through. Now, there's an urgent need to take extreme measures when it comes to climate. Special interests spend all sorts of money to deny that this global warming exists. But you know what? I want to know from somebody who knows how the global warming on the other planets work, because I know that Mars, Venus, Saturn, and Jupiter are all warming by the same amounts that that Earth is warming at.
I remember so when Alex Jones told that to David de Rothschild, and he goes, oh, well, those planets are closer to the sun, my friend. It's just like, okay, we can see there's some kind of agenda here that's being propped up by bullshit. What is this agenda by chance? Is it by chance to tax the only thing that is caused by all human activity, from breathing to breeding to traveling to living, right? And give all that money to criminal bankers so that they can have a well-funded world government to control every human activity.
Well, you know, that's all coming down. And while they think that that is what's going to happen, if we don't believe it, it won't occur. Now, that sounds sort of strange, but take a step outside what we know as what we've been taught. Because everything we've been taught in our schools and by our televisions and by our social structures has been extremely self-serving for those powers that used to be. But let's take something simple. Let's say that up is down. And if we look in the sky, which is normally up, we see a whole bunch of stars out there. And if we look down, which is now up, we see a whole biosystem that's extremely more complicated than what we seem to have here on Earth. So maybe small is a lot more focused and big is underdeveloped and there's nothing really out there. But we're so used to up being big and down being small that we haven't really looked at how things work. In chemistry, my area, you try and make do with the minimum amount of stuff that you need. Compounds are made from elements that are connected together, and each of those chemical bonds produces vibrational frequencies that can be measured in the IR, and you get a whole combination of things going on. Well, if you take different fractals of size, and you see that as above, so below, you'll see that everything's the same in different form, and these fractals repeat each other, just like the Mandelbrot set when you look at that sort of fractal. So we've got fractals at different sizes that come and repeat themselves, but the only requirement for self-similarity is between adjacent fractals. So who's to say how often this repeats itself over the scope of what, maybe 144 different scales from the Planck scale, 10 to the minus 37th, to the real size of the whole universe, which we can't even tell because our theories can't grasp that big?
We're not... Actually, you need to finish your point here before I comment on this, because otherwise you might lose it.
Well, the thing is that I don't think time and space work the way they've explained to us that they work. And I think time is a function of size, and space also obviously is a function of size. So what if the stars that we look up in the sky are actually cell nuclei, and we're in the cell that the sun is the nucleus of, and we're just a piece of biology in a cell of something really a lot bigger.
What does this mean, right? Because I came up with this idea of God that it's basically just a fractal scale thing. So for me and the other trillions of life forms on this planet, the Earth's our God, right? But for the Earth, the billions of stars and trillions of planets in the galaxy are its God. And to that galaxy, there's even bigger star clusters, you know, red dwarf star clusters, blue dwarf star clusters, etc., etc., that are God to it. And also, it goes down the scale as well, so each cell in my body thinks I'm a God. And inside each and every one of those cells is an entire little culture and civilization of a much smaller scale that thinks the cell that it's living upon is a god. And I was like, whoa, this is quite an important thought. So what the hell is the point in my life if I'm only a microscopic god to some things, but an entire universe to other things? And it means that cosmic irony has to be present in everything that is real. You have to be everything, and you have to be nothing in order to be real. You have to be funny, and you have to be serious in order to be real. Have you ever noticed that? The most real people that you come across are the people who are not hypocritical, but possess a profound sense of cosmic irony about them. And in order to justify your place in the universe as a god to yourselves, as a cell to the God that you are part of, the Earth, the only thing that I found really important in order to gain any kind of concrete subjectivity in my life is that I have consciousness, and that means I must play my part, whatever that part is, for my God, for all the other cells that inhabit this vessel with me.
I have to agree, it definitely is a context of the scale that we're on, but I think the Beatles had it right. Nothing is real, so there's nothing to get hung about. Just strawberry fields forever.
But I found that pain and frustration and trauma specifically has always been the Oh, you're having a bit of problem with your speakers there for a second, but it's all on now. But I found that it's always been the things that have cost me the most that have taught me the most valuable lessons. You know what I'm saying? And it's like happiness isn't something we're supposed to seek. It's something that gets given to us. Trauma is something that we unfortunately stumble into, and it's only through overcoming that trauma that we understand what happiness is, and because only then do we appreciate its value by contrasting it to the other things.
Yeah, well, the Beatles had one for that also. Happiness is a warm gun. Bang, bang, shoot, shoot. But you see, what is real is whatever we acknowledge is real. And it's perfectly okay for you to have a different reality for me, and we don't conflict until we start arguing about what that reality is. But, you know, I subscribe to Everett's many worlds theory, which says that we all live in our own time and space, and that worlds can coexist in the same places and be different. And so Sheldrake's morphogenic fields make a lot more sense to me than Einstein's space-time at this venture.
I don't know. I'm thinking about like people's part that they play and all the different talents and skills that all the people that I've met in my life have that I don't, and I've got talents that they don't, and so on and so forth. It doesn't make us better or less equal or anything like that. The thing about the scales and the fractals theory of the universe is it's kind of like if you can compress everything down to much more simplistic understandings once you've got that realization, essentially. So if I'm trying to find my place in the universe, it's like a kidney trying to find the place in my body. And it's going, oh, but I don't want to be a kidney. I'm not as important as the heart or the brain. I want to be the heart of the brain. Yeah, but bro, you do realize that if you became the heart of the brain, there'd be two brains and two hearts and no fucking kidneys and the entire body would die, right?
Right.
So why don't you just accept the fact that you've got unique abilities and talents that are incredibly useful but different to everything around you, and that it plays a vital and important role, even if you don't think so.
Yep. And the way I look at a fractal reality as a scientist might be a little different than the way other people look at fractals. To me, when you're dealing with quantum mechanics and fractals, what you're saying is that at the scale I'm working with, this is what I define as a unit of one. And that unit of one cannot be broken down any further than that unit at the scale we're working at, or else we're working in a different fractal. So your kidney and the heart and the brain, which it wants to be, are all different organs in the fractal of a human being. But if we're in the fractal of all humans, human scale, as Kirkpatrick Sale called it, at human scale, human is the smallest thing, base fractal, and you either be or not be. You think, therefore you are. But as Lennon and the Beatles once sang, it's all mind games.
Well, I came up with a great quip a while ago. How do you know if you're under mind control? If you've never questioned whether or not you're under mind control.
Yeah.
And it just seems to me that there's a convergence happening. It's upon us. There is good, there is evil, there's bad things going on, there's good things going on. Everything's getting better and worse at the same time, right? I'm just wondering if we're going to be entering into a new cycle, if the old cycle that has so far throughout the thousands of millennia, goodness knows how long civilization's actually been around, the suppression of science and history and ancient archaeology and so on and so forth taken into account, we don't know who we are, we don't know where we come from, we don't know where we're going. That cycle is something I would like to see broken.
Well, you know, I think it has been. If you look at David Wilcock and his latest book, The Synchronicity Key, he starts talking about some of the Mayan cycles, and we just had a Mayan cycle end on December 21st, 2012, and that would be about 26,000 years in scale. And if you think about it, we are now, what, 3-4 years past that date? And in 26,000 years, 3 years is less than 0.01%. And if you are a scientist and you look at error bars, 0.01% is a totally impossible error to achieve. So we are still in the window of that event having taken place. Now, as I talked about the many worlds theory, I believe that there are multiple timelines in play right now, and the timeline that ended it in the 20th century still has a lot of energy and inertia that has to play out, and so a good portion of the life on Earth is caught in that timeline that is ending, but a whole nother portion of the life on Earth is in the new Earth that hasn't differentiated itself from the old Earth, but will have different playing rules for the game of living on Earth. And I really think that growing our own food, localizing, and being comfortable with a lot less material, but a lot more quality of material, is where we're going to find ourselves being.
Well, it's like Forrest Gump said, there's only so much money a man needs and all the rest is for show. And I'm starting to think that that's actually not entirely dissimilar from all the things that we have and all the things that we want, you know? Like, what I find very ironic is things like... I'm not sure if it's ironic or if it just makes me want to stab myself in the eye socket with a wrench. I don't even know how that's possible, but people with iPhones that they paid $1,000 for, writing F capitalism on it, when it was capitalism that created the iPhone and sold it to you, and you were able to purchase it because of capitalism, you know? Like, yeah. like we're that out of touch as a species. We're out of touch from everything, as if we've got blinded. Like, how do you blind somebody's sense of touch? How do you blind somebody's sense of hearing, their eyes, their smell, their taste, so that nothing that any of these senses pick up is actually real? However it's done, it has been done to the entire human race, I think.
Well, you know, we've been impressed upon to do everything in boxes. And we go from our box house to our box cubicle in our box car and look at box screens and spend all our time in this cognitive dissonance of a world that isn't really real. And so we have to find ways of letting it go and coming back to reality, but everybody's been trained in the same school system to believe in the same things, and we've gotten entrained into that wavelength. We don't have a way of getting out of it, and so we're not terribly functional there.
It's not entirely dissimilar from how the people in the Caribbean couldn't see Columbus's ships, because the concept of a ship didn't even exist in their mind. And it was only once the shaman showed them that there were actually ships there that they could physically see them. Now, I if it's possible then for us to become blinded by things that are outside of our consciousness and outside of our reality, and for many people that thing is chemtrails, then surely it is possible to make them appear, you know, to make them visible. But do we not have? But do we even have shaman anymore that can see these things that others do not? Or was the Catholic Church virtually 100% successful in exterminating the vast majority of those practice of those practitioners?
Well, I think that we all have the ability to do that, but we've sort of not used the senses that we need. We went from an active species to one that sort of became inactive. And instead of doing things, we watch other people do things. And we don't get involved. And the things we think we know don't come from first-hand information. It comes from people telling us what's going on. When I first learned to be a scientist, one of the things we had to do was repeat other people's experiments and get the same results so that we knew how to use the equipment and everything was okay for us then to do cutting-edged work. And now, heck, all the information isn't published because companies like to keep their trade secrets, and what's in the scientific literature is mostly agenda, not true science. Plus, you've got another thing that compounds it. We are exceptionally talented individuals, and one of the things we can do is we can direct things with our thoughts. So if you put your mind to it and you go single focus on something, you are likely to manifest it. Well, when we taught scientists to go out into laboratories and do a bunch of stuff to learn about the unknown, and they went out and knew that they could do it, that knowledge that they could do it allowed them to do things that really weren't allowed in the rules of the world as set up, but because we are powerful enough to change the rules, we did things that couldn't be explained. Well, now that the explanations are all falling apart on everything they've told us, maybe the way things work aren't at all like that. A friend of mine wrote a story at her website called farmwars.info about our common education being a fiction written by narcissists, gaslit through emotional abuse inflicted by flying monkeys. And it really makes an image when you consider that the flying monkeys are from the Wizard of Oz, and the whole Wizard of Oz is an allegory of what's going on. You watch The Wizard of Oz and then watch The Matrix and tell me that there's not people out there trying to tell us how things work when you do pull back that curtain from the little man pulling the knobs.
And I think the curse of youth is saying that although you're working towards that end, the end in which you strive for simply doesn't happen fast enough.
Well, that's a matter of time as a perspective, too. We just are impatient.
Well, do you think we as a human race are impatient, or are there, you know, lots of individuals who basically, you have enough experience and you've got enough things like, as a journalist, I've become, at the advice of one of my good friends who's a much better journalist than I am, I've become much more jaded and much more cynical, right? And in so doing, I kind of come up with predictions and analysis of things that are happening that are very, very close to the truth without even looking at the evidence, because what I've managed to do is figure out exactly how the people who run stuff work. And it's in a jaded, cynical manner in which they work. So if you apply that same thought function to any news story you see and things of this nature, you begin to become a lot more correct with your predictions. And when you're wrong, it's usually because what's happening is a lot worse than you could ever conceivably imagine. The other element I find is particularly interesting, particularly when it comes to chemtrails, in fact, is how it can be going on right in front of people's faces and they cannot see it, even when people show them the evidence. Now, it's a cross between Stockholm syndrome, the Caribbean people not being able to see the ships, and malignant psychopathic mind control programs that have been inflicted upon the population to control their thoughts through repetition, ostracizing people who are original thinkers, keeping that silo mentality, and a little bit of sleep deprivation, because everybody has to get up early in the morning to go to school, and that's going to shut down your higher brain function in a jiffy, isn't it?
Yeah, when I talked about gaslighting earlier, what the practice of gaslighting is it came from a movie from the 1930s, a psychological thriller, and the husband was messing with the wife by turning down the lights, and lights at that time were lit by gas. So he'd walk around the house and turn down the lights, and she'd say, "Oh, it's getting dim in here. Can you turn up the lights?" And he says, "It's not dim in here. The lights are up at maximum." And continually questioned her until she lost the ability to trust her own senses. That's really the position that the American people, or the whole world population, has gotten itself into. Whoa. Is that we've been told that what we can see and believe isn't true for so long that we disbelieve our own ability to interpret that information.
Well, that's very similar to how a psychopath operates. They get somebody to, or let's say they're a complete scumbag, right? Total sociopath. And they just manipulate somebody and they lie to them and so on and so forth. And then when the person suddenly realizes they're lying, they question them. And then the psychopath just goes, "No, that's crazy. I mean, how could you ever think this?" And then they tell everybody else that's their friend that they're crazy and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. So the person starts to question their own sanity, when the thing is, they're just being manipulated by somebody who's insane. They themselves are not insane. Not yet. Unless they keep listening to them.
Right. And that's what we call advertising.
You've hit the nail on the head. I've just been thinking about that this morning and yesterday, and it's been driving me nuts. Advertising, advertising, advertising. Why do I hate it so much? That's why.
Yep. Because you know that they're giving you a line, but it has been built up over such a long period of time that your consciousness says, "No, this time it's true." And you buy the product and you find once again, it was not true.
Maybe that's been my problem. Like, I don't like McDonald's. I'll maybe eat it once a year just to see and to make sure that it's still as crap as it always was. Just to give me that little bit of a, I know. However, it's a waste of time, isn't it? Because if I already think and I already know, and I've already had the experience which tells me so, the only thing that is corrupting my mind and actually making me go back at any point, no matter how little I do it, is the crazy advertising.
Well, I have managed to turn off a lot of that in my world. I actually, from my journey after 2007, when I had a vision quest and got turned upside down and started a search for what really is, I managed to go and become a hermit. I managed to stop using the monetary system at all. I managed to take a different approach to the entire endeavor of how to conduct wealth in the world. And I'm only now getting to the point where I'm coming back out and ready to try and apply some of the lessons I learned by cutting everything off. But I came to the conclusion early on that we have to do something different. And by entraining ourselves in the common perspective while trying to do something different was not going to work. It was just going to have people continually questioning me because they didn't understand that I wished to be outside of the mechanisms that they created. See, in chemistry, there's something called a transition state. And the transition state comes about when everything lines up perfectly in the instant before the reaction happens, so that if something's not right, it can be backed off of. But once you've crossed that transition state, the next thing that happens is energetically downhill, and you can't stop, reverse the process any longer. It's like once they launch a rocket to go into space, you can't unlaunch the rocket, no matter what the troubles are. Well, I think we're near that transition state right now, where things are going to change radically. And I think the difference is going to be what a lot of people are calling disclosure. A lot of people associate disclosure with the presentation of the fact that there are aliens in the world and space can be traveled. But I'm not 100% sure that that is what disclosure is. I think disclosure is going to be giving us more information about what we know, because it's obvious to me that in a world where man is only 6,000 years old, man couldn't have built the pyramids, but the pyramids were built by men, so what's wrong? Obviously the timeline is.
I think that if you want to control people, the easiest way to do it is to make them forget who they are, right? And the best way to do that is just to suppress their history, you know? Just say, hey, you got no idea, bro. No idea. You know, there's no records. There's no records. Yeah, what was that huge library that burned to the ground, bro, that had all the knowledge of the world in it? Library of Alexandria. So you're saying there's no records, right? Apart from the ones that you fucking burned and then took all the good juicy documents and then locked them away in the Vatican, right? Right. So you do know what's going on, don't you? And he goes, well, yeah, of course we do, because we've occulted the knowledge to keep it secret from everybody else. Because knowledge is power, therefore, hide it from everybody else, because otherwise they'll have power too, and you won't be able to dominate them with shit that they don't know.
Yeah, the idea of power is sort of interesting. There's a lot of difference between power and force, but people don't quite understand that, and that the way that people are using power now is to force other people into actions, and so we're going to get actions that have been forced. But I think that if we can simplify to a local level, get people actually in touch with the land, growing food, gardens instead of lawns, and other things, that we're not going to have near the problem recreating civilizations all over in a variety of different ways that give us more diversity. Whereas right now, the system is terribly constrained by the economics of everything that have fallen apart. And we don't really have to look at the world in economic terms. I mean, chemistry, we look at it as mass balancing.
Well, let's get back into that when we come back from the break, because we were supposed to be talking about chemtrails here, but we're actually getting into some really heavy, deeply philosophical kind of stuff here, and I like it, because honestly, you'll never hear anything like this, anything close to it, anything resembling it, anywhere near or on mainstream media, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. And please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and make a donation or start up an automatic payment to me today. We will be right back after the break. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest is Lenny Time, just in time to round off the second hour of the show. Now, what were we talking about just before the break ended? It was something about chemical reactions, the transition period, or something like that?
Yeah, the transition state from where the chemical reaction is all set up as reactants to the place where it goes into being products.
Do you think that that's... wait a second. We're livestock. All right, that's what we are. We're cattle, we're livestock, and we basically get traded. You know? That's what our governments do, don't they? They've got us all on a sheet, and they, instead of skinning our hides or doing like that, they milk us, all right? We're more like dairy cows. We think that we're free. We wander around, and every now and again, a farmer will usher us into a different paddock where there's fresh grass, and we go, oh, that sounds very nice. But every single morning, when it's real early, we wind up having to be force marched into the milking shed to extract the juicy, juicy goodness within, right? And then you just go straight back out again to pasture. But that will just continue until the day you die, and you're never actually free. You're always behind a gate. You always got somebody telling you what to do, and you always got somebody taking something from you that was meant to be for your children.
Yeah.
Now, if that's the reality, how do we change it? Because I think that when it comes to changing realities from one thing to another, it's not the mark of wisdom or intelligence to say, oh, everybody just needs to do this. Everybody just needs to do that. I fucking hate those people. They annoy the living hell out of me because it belies the complexity of the problem with which you're dealing with. And you have to change yourself first, right? That's what the reaction is about. That's what activism is about, I think. Somebody changes their own life, their own actions, because they wanted to find out the truth. And once they do, unfortunately, they're the only one who knows. And they wind up spending the rest of their life trying to teach other people that. And only a few listen.
Well, I've got 30 different ways to solve the problem you just brought up. You want me to go through them real quick?
If you've got a whole 30 list, yeah, we've got nearly an hour, so go for your life.
Okay, to get out of the mindset that caused the problems, first thing you have to do is lose the fear by not believing what you watch on the controlled major mass media. If you believe everything they tell you is going on and get so caught up in it that you're stressed out, you're gone. Forget that. Next, look at the global view when taking local action, because the only place where you can work is where you are. And what we're doing here is we're looking out and talking to people globally, but at the end of the day, I brush my teeth back in the bathroom, and I get up tomorrow, and I'm here where I'm at. So this is the place where I have to act. Number 3, be good at what you do and be sure of what you know. Could you imagine, Vinny, if you were a talk show host and you never checked your references, how long you'd be a talk show host for?
Probably just as long as I have now.
Yeah. Well, you know how it is when you go and you hear something on the internet. You have to check it out. And if it doesn't sound true, likely it isn't. Okay, number 4. Hold a high resonant vibration. If you're happy, you do a lot better than if you're upset about something. Now, the world right now is a strange place. And it gives us a lot of negative greetings. Those things that happen because you're not paying attention or you're distracted, like you just fill yourself a plate of food and you set it on the corner of the table and it falls. And now you fed your dog, but it doesn't help your disposition. But if you'd looked at where you were setting the plate, it would have been better. So keeping a high resonant vibration helps you pay attention. Next thing to do is keep yourself healthy and hydrated. Drink lots of water. It's one of those things that won't hurt you at all. But if you're drinking water that's not necessarily drinking tea or coffee or soda pop or anything else, it's just drinking water. And water is one of those things that's vastly misunderstood. 6. Disengage yourself gradually from all activity with the system that doesn't serve your needs. Because if you're using the system, it keeps the system going. And so if you need the system to work for you, by sure use it. But if you're not using the system, withdraw from it and don't keep it going. 7. Think for yourself. Keep aware of things. No matter how much the internet tells you, if you don't believe it, it isn't true. And so if you have your own set of beliefs where you can have a basis for what you think, you're doing way better than if you're just believing what you're told. 8, make regular contact with nature. Well, heck, we just talked about that. Being from the Pacific Northwest, I'm outside every day with trees and fresh air and stuff like that. But if we can each find a way to get with nature, even if it's just keeping a plant or a pet, it makes it a lot different than when we're isolated in our created mechanical worlds. 9, take time off and treat yourself well. We all work too hard. There's not enough work for the hours in the day. So work hard when you work, but do treat yourself well. Because if you're not there treating yourself well, it gives other people permission to not treat you well. Here's one you'll like. Number 10, keep a healthy skepticism of all information. No matter how it's spun, everybody's got their own spin on what they say. And so when you get information, just make sure it fits with your own set of beliefs. In fact, that's number 11. Have a set of beliefs. And check that you actually believe in your set of beliefs. How many people do you know that tell you what they believe and then 5 minutes later go and do something exactly opposite of what they told you?
Just about everyone.
Yeah, so it's time to really take that theory and check that you believe your theories. Question everything again and build a foundation of your own knowledge to work from. As a talk show host, you get to talk to a lot of people, some of them completely out of lunch, some of them who seem to know what's going on. But you can take bits of wisdom from each one and use that and work from the base of what you know and use.
That's very similar to my philosophy, where you don't put anybody on a pedestal, but if they say things that you like, incorporate them into the part of your life, but don't try to become that person and everything that they say.
I agree with you totally. 13, learn more about everything that you find interesting. Because, you know, life's too short to not pursue your interests. 14, share love and practice peace. And if we did that, the world would be a better place, wouldn't it?
I believe so.
15, work to form agreements in common language. Because, you know, when you get too highfalutin in what you're saying, nobody understands what you just said. Well, and if you're making...
Well, that's the entire point of being a self-important pompous wanker, is to say nonsensical things that sound really complicated and really intelligent when you don't actually know what the hell you're talking about, and neither does any of the people listening to you.
How do we get all our wankers in government?
Well, somebody suggested that they create an alternative to Facebook called Wankerbook, and so that all the wankers can join that and leave Facebook for the rest of us.
Sounds like a good plan.
It's all about how it comes together. But that was
okay.
There was a very bad pun buried in there somewhere. Anyway.
Yeah. 16. Find your guild and get good at doing what you do with people you enjoy being with. The whole concept of guilds is one that I think needs revisiting. It used to be that people got their training from a guild. That's where their rules came from. And the rules that they followed helped them with their guild to get the job done. And each of the guilds had a different mission. Nowadays, heck, the guilds became unions, the unions got organized, and they sold out and made the union organizers lots of money. Not us. 17, prime the pump by using your own downtime for things that you enjoy doing. Again, in the theme, life is too short to not enjoy yourself. 18, eat good food. because, gee, good food is good for you also, and it's the nutrition that counts. 19. Change the things that cannot remain the same within your own domain. That means that if you know something isn't going to work and it's not going to be long before you have to do without, start doing without today. That's how we lower our footprint on the earth, is we all just start doing without things we just don't need. 20. Speak your piece plainly and clearly. So many people never get to say what they wanted to say because they get shouted over by those of us who keep talking even when other people have something to say. 21. Listen with attention, act with intention. I've noticed that people don't listen very well, and a lot of times I'll be talking to somebody and they'll be looking like they're thinking about what they want to say rather than listening to what I'm saying, especially when I'm answering a question they asked and they don't get the answer because they're not listening to what I'm saying and they haven't simplified enough to get back down to the level where what they're asking about makes sense.
Well, that's kind of where the understanding is, and I think it was Einstein that said, if you can't explain something simply enough, you don't understand it well enough.
Yep. But a lot of people understand things enough to believe in what they already understand and not listen to a different explanation because they're not ready to hear it.
Sometimes people just are not ready.
Yes. 22. Play games and use the framework of the game as a platform for learning. We've reached the point where schools are not effective, but you give a kid a new video game and they know how to work it in 2 days. So why don't we give them video games that teach them chemistry and biology and economics and stuff like that instead of how to operate a firearm and run through a lot of constructed hostility.
Be great though if there was a video game to teach somebody how to recognize bullshit.
Yeah, don't need that. It's almost all bullshit.
Something tells me marketing that game would be a bit of a challenge though.
Yep. 23. Find a bit of quiet time every day. You can meditate, you can think, you can just somewhere where you don't have the constant noise pounding on you. Okay. Care for all non-human beings. Animals, plants, fungi, all sorts of critters at all different levels of scale. Count on us to not destroy the planet ecosystem-wise. So maybe we should come through for them too. 25. Participate in a group with an external focus. Like the blue skies that we were talking about. The people who are pointing at the chemtrails and saying, hey, look, this isn't a good thing. It's a good organization. Support them. Or any other organization that you want to support. But support organizations that do what they say they're doing, not ones that like to feed their executives very highly and use their volunteers as slaves. 26. Turn off the television and or the computer and read a book. It is amazing how much information comes from books. And yet when they take a book and they redo it as a film to show you on television, the ending somehow seems to change and the message is different. The message of television is buy more stuff. It's not the message we need to be hearing. 27. Learn a new skill that you always wanted to have. You know? If you want to play the guitar, the only way to learn to play the guitar is to pick up a guitar and start playing it. 28. Use your imagination. Einstein once said that imagination is more important than knowledge, but basically we don't allow people to imagine anymore. It's too serious. It's too real. Don't do that.
People are afraid of making mistakes or whatever because they get punished for making mistakes when it is, in fact, the mistakes that you should be making that teach you things. Mistakes is what Absolutely. You should strive to make, not things you should strive to avoid.
Tain't no such thing as a mistake if it's all a learning experience. And this is a holograph that keeps repeating itself until we get it right. So you might as well learn to get it right. 29. Stop doing things that you do not wish to do. Amazing how that works. How much easier your life becomes when you no longer keep doing things that people expect you to do and you do them just to meet that expectation. You don't have to do that. You're your own person.
That was why I quit my job and became a talk radio douchebag.
I'm with you, and you're not a douchebag. You're a good radio talk show host.
Well, technically, I came up with a new term for it, because you know what a douchebag is actually used for? Cleaning out dirty vaginas, right? And
right?
That's why I call myself a douchebag reporter, because I'm very, very talented at flushing out the cunts.
Okay, I can buy that, and I'll let you keep the title then.
Damn
it. 30, the last one on the list. Keep track by measuring the outcomes of the things that you wish to follow. And it's one of those things that I'm amazed at how many people believe things but have no basis to tell me how they believe them because they hear it once and they file it for instance, but they don't keep track. I have a journal that I write in my journal every day. I am off the calendar that everybody uses and work off two different other calendars. One is the Mayan calendar because that has a 365-day year, so it keeps up pretty well with the calendar that I don't work on. And the other is a 64-day calendar based on the limbic system called Triai. And to tell you the truth, today's day on Triai is sound flowing. So if it's my day for sound flowing, it's a great time to be working on my fourth hour of radio interview, don't you think?
You know, you might have something there.
So the Triai system, which is one of my favorite ways of tracking things, involves 8 different concepts. Mass, flow, form, power, love, sound, mind, and void. And each of these concepts implies its own sequence. Like you need mass to be there before you can make form. And once you make something and form it, then it can have flow. And once the flow starts happening, then there's some power to it. And if the power starts acting, it generates love. The love leads to sound where you tell about how things went. And the sound activates the mind, so you start thinking about what next you're going to do. And on the 7th day, there's rest. So the void at the end makes it almost sort of fit into music as a framework. So I like it.
Music's pretty important, isn't it? And it's been around for a very, very long time. In fact,
it is.
Hey, what was I thinking about? Have you heard of Yaz Musical Scale?
Yaz Musical Scale? No, I haven't. Tell me about it.
It's some kind, allegedly, it's some kind of tuning apparatus by which you can tune the chords of your instruments so that they strike particular frequencies in the when notes are hit, that they trigger emotional responses in people.
Wow. I guess Beethoven had the way of doing that, because usually when I listen to the Fifth Symphony, I get a chill. Ba 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 ba. Ba 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 ba.
See, music affects us. It penetrates us. Everything is sound and electricity, I found.
Yep. Hey, my computer is dying on me, so I may have to bail out of you here. It just told me it's down to 10% of running option, and that ain't good.
No, it's not. Okay, well, that's going to put me in a little bit of a difficult predicament, so let me just collect my thoughts, because there is actually some breaking news that's going on right now that I did want to cover, but I would be meeting up with a bunch of people after the show in order to do that. However, I can probably spend the rest of the show reading out some of the articles that I've been getting sent over that time, which is a convenient and synchronistic occurrence, wouldn't you say? And I comprehend that when you have synchronistic occurrences that make your life easier, it means that you are who you are supposed to be, and you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and the universe finds a way to just keep you on that track, innit?
I have to agree with you on that, and I will keep talking until the computer actually turns itself off. And in a way, I believe life is exactly what we believe life to be, and that we are masters of our own outcome, and that the best way to change the world is by taking a positive attitude, moving forward, and starting to change the things we do in our own lives.
It's all these little actions and everything. It's the, what was it David Icke called? The totalitarian tiptoe. This is how the masters, quote-unquote, have gotten control over the bulk of humanity over this time, because they very, very slowly, step by step, taken away resistance to themselves. You know, they've monopolized everything over the course of a very, very long time period. And the problem with monopolies is that people don't like them, and they always wind up collapsing at some point.
Yes, and what we actually have collapsing right now is the style of thought that we've been taught to use. It's been a monoculture of education for so long, at least in the United States, that we've gotten to the point of staleness without incorporating new ideas. And so we're just going to have to wing it for a while and rebuild civilization from scratch, but I know we're capable of doing that.
Now, in terms of being positive, I find it's very, very difficult to do the media thing, because it's, let's just say something really, really nasty here. It's very difficult to make money off truth. It's a fuckload easier to make money off of lies, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, but making money is not the purpose of what we're doing here.
It's true. And otherwise, we'd be in the wrong business, wouldn't we? You know, it's like anybody who comes into, you know, the quote-unquote business of truth, expecting to, you know, become a millionaire, make a hell of a lot of money, they must be retarded, all right? It's probably the aluminium, bro. At least that's what I think. I could be wrong. But anyway, we have lost Lenny, unfortunately.